From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. President Obama's $800 billion economic stimulus bill has already faded from memory. It became a national laughingstock. Democrats even stopped using the word stimulus because the measure got so much criticism. But Michael Grunwald says that Obama's stimulus bill is changing America. He makes the case in his new book, The New New Deal, The Hidden Story of Change in the Obama Era. Michael Grunwald is senior national correspondent at Time magazine. He joins us today from Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Mike, in the early pages, you point out that it was the stimulus bill that restored Seattle's Pike Place Market. It was the stimulus bill that paid to take down the Elwha dams and let that river run free again. So it seems to be all around us in many ways, and yet you call it a President Obama's least understood piece of legislation. Why is that?
Right. You know, it's true. A year after it passed, the percentage of Americans who believed it had created any jobs was lower than the percentage of Americans who believed that Elvis was alive.
Hmm.
It's really incredibly unpopular. The quick answer of why, I guess there's sort of three political answers. The Republicans, as I write in the book, who were really determined even before Obama took office to kind of stop everything he did. They've really had a relentless and extremely clever campaign of deception that have really distorted what's in it. The Democrats have not have done a very good job of communicating what's in it, and the media has done an extremely bad job of reporting what's in it. That said, I think reason number four may be the most important, which is that it was a jobs bill passed at a time of when jobs were hemorrhaging. You know, they lost 800,000 jobs in January 2009. The quarter after the stimulus passed was the best improvement in jobs numbers in 30 years, but they were still bad numbers. And so it's really hard to sell an economic recovery bill when jobs are still disappearing and the recovery is so tepid.
You know, a lot of people don't even know what the stimulus bill was. You recount that that a lot of people mistook it for the bank bailout bill, which was, of course, signed into law before Obama took office by George W. Bush. Even some congressmen you spoke to didn't get it straight.
I'm afraid that's right. Yeah, people have no idea, you know, what the stimulus is. And even the people who sort of know that this was kind of supposed to stop us from hurtling into a depression, they have no idea that in addition to the sort of short-term money that there was, you know, middle-class tax cuts and aid to victims of the Great Recession and aid to states to avoid laying off teachers and cops, that there was also this incredible long-term investment that really kind of inspired the title, where you have $90 billion for clean energy when we were only spending a couple billion dollars a year. You had $27 billion for health information technology, which will essentially put our antiquated pen and paper healthcare system online. You had Race to the Top, which a lot of people have heard of as the most important education reform in decades, but they have no idea that it was part of that stimulus.
Yeah, I want to get back to some of the specifics of what the stimulus bill did. But you wrote that you were live blogging when President Obama first spoke about this in a speech. And you wrote it was the weakest part of the speech. And yet, what this legislation turned into was just astonishingly big, just in terms of money. How big was it?
Well, it was $800 billion, which in constant dollars is about 50% bigger than the entire New Deal. The size of it is really astonishing. You know, one reason I thought it was, you know, I complained during the State of the Union was that it seemed like a laundry list of all of his campaign promises. What was so amazing was that within a month, he had already made this huge down payment on so many of those campaign promises. The Recovery Act was really the purest distillation of what he meant by change we can believe in.
There is a certain cohesion to it that didn't really appear, was much publicized at the time. And let's talk a little bit more about some of those specifics. I remember at the time we kept hearing this stimulus bill was for shovel-ready projects, projects already on the drawing board. All they needed was some money to get going. Did most of those $787 billion in projects, were they shovel-ready?
Well, you know, it was a mix. And that was part of what made this so difficult to message. I mean, part of the money would go out right away, right? Aid to states, you just cut them a check. The government knows how to give out middle-class tax cuts. It knows how to send $250 to every senior. That money went out quite quickly. Now, some of the more complicated projects, you know, transportation, it's pretty easy to resurface a road. Some of those were a lot shovel-readier than, say, the world's largest wind farm and a half dozen of the world's largest solar farms and creating an advanced battery industry for electric vehicles entirely from scratch, or, you know, essentially creating this electronic medicine where every American will have their own electronic medical record by 2015. Those things are going to take longer.
You might not think much about the Obama stimulus bill. It's kind of already faded into history, although it wasn't that long ago. Mike Grunwald wants you to think about it again. His new book is called The New Deal. It makes the argument that this $787 billion passed by Obama in the early days of his administration will have as large and maybe even a bigger impact than Roosevelt's New Deal that began the recovery from the Great Depression in the 1930s and altered our landscape in many ways. Mike, you run down. I want to go back over these impacts. You referred to them briefly before. You call the stimulus bill, it has all these components to it. One was, it was the biggest and most transformative energy bill in U.S. history, you say. Give us some examples.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're talking about increases that are like order of magnitude increases for just about every link in the clean energy chain. I mean, wind, solar, and other renewables. Wind has doubled. Solar has increased 600% since 2008, when those industries were really dead in the water after the financial collapse. You had record spending on energy efficiency in every imaginable form. The smart grid, cleaner coal, electric vehicles. Like I mentioned, they created this entire battery industry, 30 new factories when we had none. The manufacturing capability to make all this green stuff in the United States, clean energy research that's already creating breakthroughs that are going to lower the cost of electric vehicles, of solar panels. It's just astonishing how they really touch just about every base.
Let's talk about another component. You write it was the biggest and most transformative education bill since the Great Society. What has it changed?
Well, you know, race to the top is probably the example people have heard of. And it's funny, that's when, you know, when I was thinking about doing this book, I write a lot about energy, and it was the $90 billion for clean energy that kind of perked up my ears and said, like, you know, in Washington, I knew this thing was a complete joke, but I actually live in South Beach, you know, a public policy paradise. So I wasn't part of this groupthink where, you know, even talking about the stimulus without rolling your eyes and snickering is completely uncool. So I said, gosh, there's all this energy money. I wonder what else is in it. And so I did this, you know, did a lot of dogged investigative reporting. I mean, basically, I did a Google search. And I was like, what? Race to the top? I mean, I'd heard there's this massive debate going on. This is the most, you know, this is the landmark education reform that's really kind of shaking up public schools. The unions are up in arms about it. This is sort of really Obama, you know, this the different kind of Democrat Obama. But I had no idea it was part of the stimulus. And that's really what kind of got me thinking about this book.
And you also call it America's biggest foray into industrial policy since FDR. What is industrial policy, and what did this do to industrial policy?
That's right. Well, that's where you start to hear a lot about, you know, this is some of the stuff Mitt Romney talks about, how Obama is picking winners and losers. And the battery industry is certainly a perfect example where they spent $2 billion to really kind of create an industry out of thin air. The idea is that if we're not making the stuff in this country, we'll just be dependent on foreign batteries the same way we're dependent on foreign oil today. And that these are such big things that these are heavy equipment. If you're not manufacturing the batteries here, you're going to end up not manufacturing the cars here. And of course, the idea is that these are a lot of jobs. These are good jobs that are, you know, in a kind of high tech industry. But it's a legitimate debate. I think, you know, reasonable people can disagree about this kind of stimulus investment. What I've tried to push back against in this book is the stimulus that we've been debating is this kind of bizarro world stimulus that is just, you know, $800 billion worth of pork when in fact there were no earmarks. You know, it's all crony capitalism when in fact there have been no examples of political pressure driving the actual decision to give somebody money.
And also, as you point out, it was unusual in such a giant program that it was fairly transparent. And wasn't it the Obama administration has used the web as a way for people to be able to look inside and see where the money was going?
Yeah, you can go online to recovery.gov and see what, you know, where the money's being spent in your neighborhood, which of course is sort of a double-edged sword. It means that, you know, people can call up and, you know, it makes it a lot easier to complain about stuff. I mean, I know I probably come off as like a shill when I talk about this stuff, and I'm a news reporter. I've been in the mainstream media for 20 years. You know, I have There's a funny scene at the end of the book where Joe Biden's kind of giving me a hard time. He says, you know, oh, I take your articles to sleep. I love them so much. You know, I didn't get into journalism because I wanted Joe Biden to cuddle up with my work. You know, I'm a reporter, and I was following the facts, and I just felt like I was, you know, I was looking at this, you know, the sort of image of what was actually in this thing was so ridiculously at odds with what was being written about. You know, all you hear about are these mob museums and levitating trains to Disneyland and snowmaking machines in Duluth. And this stuff is not in the stimulus.
Yeah.
You know, it's a complete mirage.
It's so disparate, though, and it was so large. But what do you think that the stimulus bill really revealed about Barack Obama and about the Obama era?
Yeah, I think that's a, you know, what I do think is that the stimulus bill essentially is, it's the best way to figure out about the president, about his policies, and also about his approach to politics, as well as his enemies, his achievements, his difficulty marketing those achievements in a city that's gone bonkers. I mean, he did come in talking a lot about change, and people heard a lot about he's talking about changing Washington. But he was always also talking about very specific policies that nobody paid a lot of attention to because they were interested in his race and his pastor and the ads about him and Paris Hilton, as well as, you know, the fact that his policies were not all that different from other Democrats who wanted to reverse the Bush era and kind of invest in the future. But what this really showed is this guy who kind of campaigned as this change the system outsider, he came in and the economy was falling apart and he realized that changing the country is going to be more important than trying to change the Capitol. And he's governed as a kind of work the system insider. He realized that change that doesn't pass through Congress does not make change, and that he wasn't really going to be able to do these things for education and healthcare and the economy unless he could get 60 votes in the Senate. So that's really been the defining kind of narrative of the Obama administration. It's not, you know, it's tough to get 60 votes when, you know, it means you have to cut some deals. It's not always pretty. You know, Rahm Emanuel's kind of a central character in how he got all this stuff through, so it's not always G-rated. but you know, this is sort of how it works. He ended up getting this bill that, you know, Bill Clinton had this $6 billion clean energy bill over 5 years that everybody said was ludicrous in 1999 and went nowhere. And then, you know, 10 years later, Barack Obama walks through the door and during his first month, he gets $90 billion. You know, that's sort of how change is made. And it's not always it was certainly imperfect people in an extremely imperfect legislative process. But as I think I show in the book, by tracking down where a lot of this stuff went, this is really how things change.
Mike Grunwald, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Ross.
Michael Grunwald, senior national correspondent at Time Magazine. He joined us from Washington, D.C. His book is called The New Deal. If you think you know everything there is to know about the Obama stimulus plan, you might take a look at it. It reveals aspects you had never really thought of before. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.